I'm here to tell you about Naptime Radio. It's a show for moms and dads, and these chicks are super cool.
Mac Daddy and Damia.
And they want you to listen.
Yes, we want it. We want it so bad.
I know you do. Heather and Kate offer helpful info for parents with their power naps. Oh, and did I mention? These chicks are sexy as hell, y'all.
Let's ride that train.
All I need is a ticket.
Let's eliminate one article of clothing for one meal. How about that?
Oh, now it's a party. So go to naptimeradio.com or click on the logo available on our site.
Nailed it!
Chase the sun.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 19. We are coming to you live from Casa de Worsham and what I am going to call Casa de Densmore. Here with me is author and fellow member of the Guild of Fatherhood, Pete Densmore. Say hello, Pete.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Justin, for having me on. Love your show.
It is. Oh, thank you. You are too kind, sir. You are too kind. I'm going to be honest with you, Pete. We chatted a little bit before we started this show. And I don't know what your fatherly world is like. I don't know what the rest of all the dads and moms that listen to the show's world is like. But mine kind of sucks ass right now. But before I even get going, I'm already getting sidetracked. Excuse me for a minute, Pete, because I want to address something that I did on the last episode that people have heard. It's been a couple weeks for me, but for people who are maybe playing catch up or whatever. I got a little self-loathing on the last episode you heard before this one with Joseph Bears, and I lashed out a little bit about some of the listeners, and I immediately started getting Facebook messages and Twitter tweets or whatever. Now I'm a 68-year-old man who doesn't know what it is. Tweets about it and emails. And so first off, I just want to make this clear. I'm not angry at any of the listeners. It's not how it works. I'm having a rough go. Right now, not just in fatherhood, but I guess in life, maybe too, I could say. And so I lashed out a little, but it's not you. Thank you for listening to the show. And I really don't feel like this is a backpedal in any way, shape, or form. I just want to be honest and say that I appreciate all the subscribers and the paid subscribers and all of that stuff and the donations that you guys sent in. So having said all that bullshit, let's move on. And since
does this have anything to do with the car accident?
Well, it has that came after. That's the thing that it's just like.
More shit on top of shit.
Yes, exactly. It's one of those things. I'm in a when it rains, it pours kind of scenario right now where I feel like. I don't know how to do anything in front of this microphone but be completely honest and transparent. So what happens when I do that is that sometimes I get a little diarrhea of the mouth, and then I kind of say things. I'm like, why did you say that? Usually it's true in that moment, but it's not true of my character. And I felt like I got a little like, guys, I need money, guys. Me, poor me. Like, nobody feels that. But also, so here's my thing. You're right in that. Let me address that. I had a car accident. I was on my way to do another podcast that
Justin's calling in from the hospital right now. That's how dedicated he is.
Thanks for bringing the comedy to the show, Pete. Somebody's got to do it. I go through. There's a God damn it. It's really frustrating. So I'm there. I see this van coming at me. There's nothing I could do about it. The guy runs a red light, plows into me. If I didn't stop when I stopped, it would have really hurt me, to be quite honest. I'm not trying to be dramatic, but he was doing about 35, 30, I'm guessing. And that's, I think, an underestimate. I think he might have been going a little bit faster. And he was in a big, full-size Chevrolet van, and I'm in my little tiny Toyota Corolla S-Series because I like a spoiler. Makes me feel fancy. And... So he just hits me, right, and the tire, and just pushes my car to the side, and then gets out and goes, I'm so sorry, I didn't see you. And it's like when you're on your way to do what you kind of do as a job, but there's not really much of a paycheck, if any, that comes from it. It's, you know, you have that going on. And then it's just all you see is the fact that this thing that you're doing just keeps costing you money, because now, even though the insurance covers it, anybody who's had this happen where your car gets totaled, they give you a check for it. But you're kind of like, well, I can't just go out and buy the car that, you know what I mean? You can't buy the same car. You have to get a new car, essentially, and this is kind of offsetting the expense of getting a new car. So this guy hit me and essentially is taking $7,000 additional dollars out of my pocket that just goes away now because I need to get another car. And I don't know, maybe I should just get a nice, you know, $5,000, $6,000 car, but you know what I'm talking about. You got two kids.
I don't think those exist anymore.
Right? That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just like, and then not to mention the fact that now I got to go around, and in order to get that money, you know, that amount for a car, I have to go find it, and I have to look through Craigslist or newspapers and Auto Trader and all that bullshit. And it's just like, this motherfucker ruins my world and just comes out and says, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't see you, right? Now, because he's driving a big fucking van, it's like a scratch on his bumper and it's dented in a little bit. And then the son of a bitch, I'm gonna go off on a little bit of tirade, Pete, and so I apologize. This is what anybody who's ever been on this show feels like.
It's the power of the microphone.
I have a guest to listen to me. I'm so sorry, Pete. I promise there will be a time, and I hope you're cool with this, and I apologize if you're not. So he has the audacity, this son of a bitch, Pete, to look at me and say, do you have insurance, is what he says to me. And I look at him and I go, do I have insurance? Do you have insurance? You're the one that plowed into me. And he goes, well, I know, but this is what you do, right? And so I go, okay. So I go, yeah, I got insurance, but I need yours. And so we start exchanging information. It's very obvious. He ran a red light and plowed into me, has ruined my car. And so I get his information, but he also wants mine. And so I just go, he goes, also, I need your driver's license. I go, what do you need my driver's license for? You're the one that ran the red light and plowed into me. And he says it again. He's like, I know, but this is what you're supposed to do. And this is what I think is wrong with car accidents and society in general. This is a son of a bitch who ruined my life. And instead of looking at it like, God, I'm so sorry, I fucked up, my job is to do whatever I can to get you on and moved on with your life. I don't need anything from you. I know this is my bad. But because we have this situation where he still feels like he's got to not get fucked over in this situation, even though he's in the fucking cat's meow seat, he's in the king's fucking throne, he doesn't have to do a goddamn thing but sit there and let his insurance write a check and, oh my God, my premiums are going to go up. Yeah, motherfucker, you ran a red light and ruined a car. If I ever plowed into somebody, I would just be like, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm gonna call the insurance company tomorrow. We'll get this taken care of. Because guess what? I fucked up. And I need to own up to my fuck up. And the reason I'm so angry about this is that this motherfucker, this hit me on August 28th. Now, I don't know when you're listening to this, but this recording happened on September 5th. Pete, guess how far along we are in the process of me getting my goddamn check for my ruined car. Take a stab, Pete.
I think you're about 6 months away.
Because here's what has to happen for anybody who hasn't been through this, but I think just about everybody has had this horrible, and if you haven't, God bless you. Keep going. Awesome. Buy a lottery ticket.
Time will come.
Yeah, exactly. I hope not. I really would not wish this upon anyone. But of course, he runs a red light and he hits me. I make a claim with my insurance. They contact him. Now, unfortunately, my dumbass was trying to save a coin and get just the liability insurance. Now, I still stand by my reasoning, because if this motherfucker did what he was supposed to do, I wouldn't have to rely on my own collision insurance. I would just, the liability is on him. So he gives me his phone number. I give him my phone number. I call my insurance company on the way to the mechanic. The insurance company says, great, good job. I took pictures of everything, sent it to them. So then they contact his insurance company, and his insurance company tries to contact him, has still not contacted him. It's been over a week and this motherfucker can't take the time to pick up the phone and say, it's my bad, pay the man so I can move on. And then the motherfucker on his insurance, I'm cursing a lot, son of a bitch from his insurance company is, I like that I cleaned it up with son of a bitch. Is that what you're laughing at? I noticed that too. Thanks, Pete, for chuckling. I wish we were really good friends, Pete. This would make me feel less miserable about just fucking vomiting into a microphone while you're just sitting in your nice house across the country. But anyway, so he can't pick up the phone. And then the insurance guy goes, this is what pisses me off, right? So I've done my due diligence. And then the insurance guy goes, well, I went by and I looked at your car. It looks like we're going to total it. I said, that's fine. He said, but what you need to understand is that we only have to do what is fair. And I go, okay. And he said, so there's a storage fee. I don't know if you know this, Pete, but if you take your car to the auto body shop, they charge you anywhere from 30, maybe 60 bucks a day. My guy, $65 a day is what he charges, okay?
Just for holding your car.
Just for it sitting there, which is fine. I don't care. He's not the problem. And honest to God, he is not the problem. That he can charge whatever the fuck he wants because it's his goddamn lot. And so what they tell me, though, is that they say, well, because we've decided to total the car, and I've told you, even though he also has to motherfucking backpedal and say, but I haven't agreed to that we're liable yet until I've talked to my insured. But you know, you now have the information that I potentially could possibly, if Jupiter's in its seventh fucking house of Aquarius, total your car. So therefore, in order for it to be fair, you have to get your car out of the auto body shop so that you don't rack up charges for storage. Why am I racking up charges for fucking storage? Because your son of a bitch asshole won't pick up the phone and say, I ran a red light and plowed into this poor son of a bitch. Give him his money. So therefore, now I got to take a car and put it in my house where there's no place to put it. Yes, do I manage the apartment building? Sure. But if I was a tenant at this building, we do not allow inoperable vehicles to be stored here. So then he starts giving me this lecture. Well, you have to do what's fair. I go, you want to talk about fair? How about the fact that I called you day of and I've done my due diligence and he is dragging his feet on this? How is that fair? I'm also entitled to a rental car. Have I gone to get a rental car? No. Why? Because I don't feel like gouging anybody. Because I'm not a dickhead. That's why. You're going to yell at me about how, well, I'm not going to pay for 3 weeks of storage. You should. You should pay for 3 weeks of fucking storage if you're the one dragging your feet. Just cut a fucking check if you don't want to pay the money. God damn it. Pisses me off so bad. Because then he says, he finally gets a hold of the guy, and the guy says, this is my work schedule. Call me on this last Friday. That would have been, the 31st of August, right? So he says, call me on Friday. He says, I'll call you on the afternoon. So I call him on Friday afternoon because I haven't heard from him. And then I have to call him again this Tuesday on the 4th of September. I call him twice, once in the morning, once in the afternoon. He finally calls me back and says, I still haven't had a chance to talk to my insured. Really? Really? A week later? Are you fucking kidding me? Oh, God damn it. And he has the audacity to lecture me about what is fair. Oh, God damn it. That felt good. Are you okay, Pete? How are you hanging in there? Am I making you angry at all? Is any of this spilling onto you unfairly?
Extremely.
Extremely. Well, I should have really just done this beforehand. But since I'm fired up, let's do a little suburban rage and have a little fun with being white guys without real problems.
That BTA bitch giving you the stink eye. The drive-thru just screwed up your order. And your neighbor's Yorkie Terrier doesn't stop fucking barking. That's right. You don't have real problems. It sounds like you have suburban rage.
So I've already talked about my auto insurance suburban rage, although I kind of feel like that is a real problem. Sure, am I trying to find water where there isn't sustainable water or food? No, that's not, I guess, what would be a real problem. But this is another thing that happened to me today. I don't know if you've ever had. Have you ever dealt with a rotted sippy cup, Pete?
Oh, yes. Many a time.
Many a time, right? And now I'm curious, how does a rotting sippy cup happen in your world, Pete?
I blame milk. Quite often I blame most things in life on milk these days. I've got my son who is 2.5, my daughter who is 10 months. My son is addicted to milk. We allow him milk or water. We haven't really gone the juice route with him.
Smart.
But instead of wasting milk, if he drinks half a milk, we'll put it in the fridge.
Yes.
And for some reason, the milk that sits in his cup overnight smells like ass.
Even when it's in the fridge.
While the milk that sits in the milk gallon.
Got it.
It's lovely the next morning. I don't know what happens with the sippy cups that they make, but over a 12-hour time period from 7 o'clock in the evening till 7 o'clock in the morning, within those 12 hours, something ferments between the milk and the sippy cup to make it smell ungodly. And
that's interesting.
Every morning, it doesn't fail. We could use a different sippy cup. It reeks. It is horrible.
This is real.
My wife and I are kind of put up our hands as to what we can do because it keeps happening, and you know, to no fault to ourselves, we keep using the damn cup. So
this is awesome. This is not my intent, because I can't believe that we do the same thing. We put it in the fridge. Now, granted, we haven't really smelled it, but I've tasted it early on. It's not like it tastes funky or anything like that. That is crazy interesting, because here's what we deal with. What we deal with is now that both children are mobile, we have sippy cup loss. It's there's some kind of like. My kids treat sippy cups like a Depression era grandparent treats cash. Like there's little stockpiles around. I wouldn't be surprised if my kid had made some kind of like push release button in a drywall section of his room and then has like three or four sippy cups in there, because you have to do like a crazy quarterly inventory every goddamn night before you go to bed. God forbid you're too tired to forget about it or to remember it, and then they're just gone. And then if they find a really good hiding spot, like we have a little closet underneath our stairwell. That was the first big one that we'd had in a while. But the one that happened most recently, God love my wife, okay? And I know she's a great lady. She's a fantastic mom. So let me put out that disclaimer before I shit all over her. But that woman cannot put any kind of fucking liquid in a bag without it ruining stuff. I don't, like, even a perfume bottle in her own goddamn purse, Pete. First, let me say this, too. I'm a really big fan of your name, Pete. I've never really said anybody's name as much as I've said yours. because I feel like I'm really aggressive right now. I'm really angry. And you have a good, solid name to be angry with. Like, I'm not angry at you, but I feel like I unintentionally keep going. Am I right, Pete? Huh?
Come on, Pete.
Yeah, I feel like Pete is a good, like, buddy name. Like, just, yeah. Like, you could yell or, like, Pete, come on. Yeah, exactly.
God damn it, Pete.
Yeah, damn it, Pete. Pete, you beautiful son of a bitch. It works every single way. It's a great goddamn name. I wish I would have thought of that before I named my kids. But here's my point. She puts a liquid in a bag. So here's what we have. We have one of those Dad Gear diaper bags. Have you seen those with the backpack? They got the white patch. If you haven't heard of it.
I got them. Yeah, my wife got me one. They're excellent. Love them.
I love their bags. I'm not fans of those motherfuckers because I tried like 8 times to get them to sponsor this podcast because I would do nothing but cram their products down our fantastic listeners' throats. And I just really believe that when you get the concept of making a diaper bag for a dad, it's fucking practical. It's organized. It's great.
Yeah, and it's camo. Mine's camo.
Oh, fucking, that's hot. Mine's bright orange, not camo at all. Suburban camo. So anyway, we have that, and the one we have has pockets on the sides, and the pockets on the sides they're a dual purpose. They have the little straps that come out that clip to themselves, so you can hang it on the handlebar of the stroller. Fucking brilliant,
right, which is key.
Or you could also put water bottles, or you could do it both ways. You could put water bottles in there and hang it from your stroller. So what my wife does is not store water. Now, I know moms have this desire to take care of their children. I don't understand it. I don't agree with it. I'm totally kidding. But my wife has to, when we leave the house, the diaper bag is an opportunity to take everything from the fucking house with her. Everything that child could possibly ask for. Yes.
One bag.
We've got to have 3 different versions of fruit cups in case he's in a peach mood or a pear mood. And we have to have crayons. We have to have 4 different sun hats, diapers and wipes, which I know are key. We have to have Aquaphor. We have to have teethers, little teethers. We have to have different cups of different kinds of snacks, like fucking cheese puffs, Cheerios, Cheez-Its, Ritz crackers, 2 different kinds of fucking crackers, Pete. God damn it, I love your name.
And that's just to get to the grocery store.
Exactly.
It's insane.
You could be going out to just fucking on a walk, and it's, damn it, let alone. So, and then, never, why is it that we can't just hydrate a child? Do we really think that a fucking 30-pound, fat-as-fuck, borderline sumo wrestler 14-month-old is going to just waste away to nothing if he goes 2.5 hours without drinking whole milk? Is that really going to happen? I know you agree with me, Pete, but I agree with you with this fucking milk pain. It doesn't make sense to me. And so here's why I'm so angry, is that we've come home from Jacob's birthday party, my oldest. He turned 4, and we had the little sippy cup. She put it in the water bottle pocket, Pete. And it's sitting in there, and I don't know what's there. She's horrible with liquid in containers and bags. And I have a day when we come home, and I keep walking up and down the stairs, and I just smell this fucking rotting smell. And I'm like, it almost like, is that a fucking diaper? You know how you
like, I know I haven't showered in the week, but I don't smell like that after a week of not showering.
You're pretty damn close, Pete, because I hadn't showered that day. And I'm like, is that my fucking ass? Am I smelling my own goddamn nuts from
That's
like
what all those funny looks at the birthday party?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I keep, that's funny. We should be friends, Pete. You're like, in my brain, this is great.
Yeah.
I walked by, I'm like, is that my fucking feet that I'm smelling? Is that my wife's goddamn shoes? Because goddamn, they stink. But is that my own ball sack? Like, I did think that. I'm like, is that a shitty diaper somewhere? And you're looking around. And what I love about being a parent is that when you have these smells that come up, it's not like, shit, something's wrong. I got to call the building manager or an exterminator. Something is dead in my walls. You're like, no, there's... I don't know that smell, but it's very reasonable for there to be a reason behind it. And then to also make the decision to continue on with your day-to-day life. Like George Bush said, that's the way the terrorists win, is if you let this smell affect you and stop everything you're doing, then the terrorists have won. You continue on going, I'm going to figure it out. Or the stink will become so bad that it'll actually help me pinpoint it. And so every time, imagine, Pete, every time I go up and down my stairwell, I'm like, there it is again. God damn it. And so then I need to go to do a run to the DMV to get title for this motherfucking car for this son of a bitch. And I go and I take the diaper bag with me. I put it in the car. And I go take the kids in, but thank God I would have been so embarrassed if everybody else would have been like, oh my God, that guy stinks. And, but I leave the diaper bag in the car, and it's about 86 degrees high here today, Pete. And so that, you know, that made the fucking sun oven of a minivan situation. So I opened the door just to get this fucking waft of just fermented something. Something was fucking rotted, and it was not in Denmark. And it was right in front of me. So then I start looking around, and I realize when I pick up the diaper bag to move it so it's easier for my kid to get into his car seat, that I get a strong waft of it. So it took the heat to accelerate it. And my wife had left a fucking milk sippy cup that had been sitting there for God knows how long. And so it's not
I can actually top that, Justin.
Oh, boy,
this
I'm ready.
Maybe 2 weeks ago. My wife goes, so we live out in the suburbs of Chicago, and my wife goes downtown for a girl's afternoon. And up until this point, my claim to fame was I have never had a blowout with my daughter. Oh, I've always prided myself on diapering her so bad that there is no way any shit was going to come out of her. That is my mantra for these first 10 months of child rearing with her. And as soon as my wife gets downtown, I go to change the afternoon diaper, and lo and behold, my daughter has crapped outside of her pants while she's sitting in the car seat. We had just gotten back from a stroller.
Of course.
And of course, I feel obligated to text my wife and say, honey, you win. Our daughter has just had the biggest blowout I've ever seen. So bad that when I pick her up, it's just kind of oozing down her legs like a very chocolatey Niagara Falls going down her legs. And I run over to the sink. I take off her pants. I wipe everything up. I get everything clean. Send the text message. Have a good laugh. Get everything cleaned up. And my wife sends a comical text back. Blah, blah, blah. You know, welcome to the club. It only took you 10 months where it took me 10 minutes. That kind of thing. About a day goes by, and my wife comes home and walks into the family room, and she starts sniffing around, and she gives me that look of, you know, do you smell shit? Mm-hmm. And I look at her and, you know, I have a pretty good sense of smell, but I didn't smell shit. Mm-hmm. And I could just kind of shook my head and said, no, I don't smell shit. And she gave me the look where most wives can give you the look and say, you're wrong.
Yeah.
I smell shit.
I know shit, and that's shit. Like, and all of a sudden, she's an Indian tracker.
Incidentally, at the bottom of her feet was the car seat. And she looks down there, and you kind of hear this sigh of utter frustration that husbands sometimes hear. And I get a different glance from her this time, and this is more out of disappointment than surprise or shock. And kind of looks at me and says, did you happen to clean the car seat after blowout?
Oh, Pete. Oh, no, Pete.
And I said, well, judging by the look on your face, no, I probably did not. And this had now, I guess, shit stain, for lack of a better word, our car seat that was now kind of this brown rotting hole that apparently I had become so used to over the last 24 hours sitting right next to the couch and not realizing it, that either A, I am immune to shit smell, or B, I have a lot bigger problems than I'm willing to admit on your radio show. And lo and behold, our worst nightmare of a scenario comes true, where the dry heaves start setting in, and you know, an hour's worth of scrubbing and another hour of contemplating, do we just throw it out? And then a final hour of ripping out the car seat pad and going over to Target and spending another $20 from our new favorite store.
I like that, the idea of, because I've had that happen too, where you kind of look at it and you, like an insurance adjuster, where you're like, is this worth saving? Is it worth my time to pull this apart and do the Sudoku that it is to figure out how to pull the straps out? Or is it just better just to
figure out how much do you want to or not want to spend $20?
Yeah.
Now, you brought this smell, you know.
Oh yeah.
To my wife was horrible. Apparently I was immune to it, which is,
that's good. That means you still have your manliness. I think like there's a dude that just moved into the building I manage, and you could tell, like, he'd only been there 24 hours, but it already smelled like dude. And I noticed it because I live with a woman.
But, yeah, right.
But I could tell.
Oh, that smell, that sweet smell of food.
But he has no idea.
I haven't smelled that in 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. Two or three dudes in an apartment just gets musky. Ugh. But you brought this up, and I'm curious, just I want to know if you do have an actual technique, because I think it's hilarious, is the no blowout diapering. Do you have a special technique, or you just thought because you changed it so regularly?
My technique is to have diaper marks by the time I take it
Got
off.
It. That's, so you
that's
try
my
to
tightness.
Limit circulation to the lower extremities.
I don't
extremities.
Cut off circulation, but I like to leave a mark that daddy's been here with the diapering. And that usually spells success.
So your diapers.
Apparently, I got a 95% ratio to date.
That's a pretty.
Hey, that's
almost as good as a condom,
you know?
Bro. That's almost as good as a condom. That's a good seal. That's a solid seal. I like that. I like because that makes me think of like weather stripping around. That's what dad gear should do for diapers, is some kind of foam weather stripping, you know, that you put around your door or window just to create a little bit of cushion and give that's going to ebb and flow with your baby. Like, this would be a good, nice, another practice. Because here's what I think. I think these people that Sealer Posturepedic or whatever is with that memory foam, that's really the only application is to lay on it. But if you throw some memory foam in a fucking diaper, that's pretty sweet. And that's going to create a nice seal. It's going to hug up against the genitals real well.
I think we have the next great idea coming out of this.
Yeah, we're pretty amazing. We're pretty amazing with what we do here on the show. What else do I have that I wanted to bitch about? I want to talk about this. This is a rough episode for my wife. I have so many goddamn kids cups from restaurants. Every time my fucking kid goes to an Outback or any kind of, you know, and they give you the nice kitty plastic cup, she thinks that it's like it's his 21st birthday and he went to Harrah's or something. She's got to keep this shit as a and I think here's what I know about my wife. I know that she's frugal, right? Or she likes to think that she is. So here's what she'll do. She'll be like, oh, we got to save these cups because I don't want them to go to waste. And then that's a free cup. We didn't have to buy a cup for the kid. But then whenever he goes to Party City, we'll buy him a fucking plastic Avengers cup every goddamn time she goes. Then you compound that with the fact that it makes no sense to me that somebody could call themselves frugal, but then want to eat out every goddamn day for lunch. And then when I'll say, hey, can I make you something for breakfast? No, I'm good. And then immediately go spend $9 at Starbucks. How that makes any sense that you want to be frugal and keep kids' cups and all they do is fill up my cupboard and make me angry. And if I was a smart man, in fact, I'm going to do it. A smart man would just throw them away because guess what? She doesn't fucking know. Does your wife keep kids' cups too, or am I alone in this angst?
No, she doesn't. We try to leave the restaurant with more than we came in with, to be honest.
Wait, you try to leave the restaurant with more, so you steal everything from the restaurant? Not kidding. Are you the guy who put that fork in the diaper bag? Is that what you're saying you guys do?
Free placemat.
Oh, all right. Good times. Well, all right. Maybe I'm the only asshole then.
I mean, if the kid loves his coloring placemat, that's coming home with us. That's a nice hour at night for him.
Man, that is smart. All right. Well, I stand corrected. It takes a big man to admit when he's wrong, and I will do it right here and now, and I will go to
an N of two, though.
Huh?
You're going to have to pull your listeners. Right now we're an N of two.
What else did I have here? This is a more of a driving thing, but have you ever had it feel like every time I have someplace to be, that's when everybody who doesn't have someplace to be likes to pull right in front of me in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know if it's an isolated thing where it's like, no, Justin, it's just Murphy's Law. When you have someplace to be, you are hyper aware of people that get in your way because you have an objective. But I just feel like there's constantly a general sense in my life that, hey, I got some shit I got to get done, and I have a limited time to do it. And these motherfuckers who don't know how to drive a car and they you know when you're in the right lane and then there's a like a bike lane that you could turn right at a traffic light? I don't know if you have this same scenario in Chicago.
I don't. Well, no. Yes, we do drive the same in Chicago with driving on the right and stoplights. But I share the same scenario only in walking.
Oh, yes.
I am a now ex-city guy living in the suburbs who's still commuting into this city. So all
so
of
you
your
take
traffic
a train
problems,
or what?
I know exactly where you're going with it, but my traffic problems are on foot.
Do you take a train then?
I take a train in every day, and my biggest pain in the ass is getting to and from work in 17 minutes flat. I have 17 minutes when I get off the train to get into work by 8:30, and I have 17 minutes from getting to work to the train before it leaves. Otherwise, I miss the train and I have to wait another half an hour.
Oh.
And I have to do this 17-minute walk, which is actually a 25-minute walk. So, you know, for the last 6 months that we've moved out here, I've gotten shin splints, sweats, bumps and bruises, trips, falls.
Oh, you've taken spills.
It's like a walking sprint to get to and from the train station. It's miserable.
I like it. It's Pete.
Yes.
He's headed into work. He's going on the train. But there's old people everywhere and little kids trying to get to preschool. And he's trying to juke and dodge them, but he's going down on his knee, but he can't be brought down. He's making
Mama,
moves like the
mean?
Sweetness. He's spinning around, dodging old people. This is what I imagine is playing every time you get off the train. And I imagine Chris Berman like, rumbling, tumbling, fumbling. So I could definitely relate to that, because here's where that happens to me. It always seems to happen at the hardware store with fucking old people. And I don't mean fucking old people in a disrespectful way. I mean it in the most respectful way possible. And that because I feel like an asshole when I like when you pass them, like I'm not being like I'm not appreciating what they've been through in life, because I'm like, look at what I can fucking do still. yeah, exactly. I don't know why that is, but I feel like such a dick every time I pass them. So instead, you try to politely like walk behind them. But you do I don't know. You probably do this, too, where you do the walking. It's the walking equivalent of revving your engine at the people in the parking lot because you think they can't hear you. You just kind of. kind of enter their bubble a little bit in hopes that they'll feel you and like look behind. But it's the same dick move. Like if you're an old person, you could barely move, and then you turn around, there's some guy right on your ass. You're like, "Well, go around, you son of a bitch," you know.
Oh, totally. When I'm walking to the train station, you have this human funnel that is converging from like three streets into one sidewalk. Everybody has like these trains that leave on the minute, and my pushy ass is like zigzagging between every single person you might see at downtown Chicago from all walks of life. And it's funny that you mention old people, because I've never wanted to stiff arm more people than the people who walk on the left-hand side of the sidewalk and are completely oblivious. And don't even get me started on the people who are fucking texting when they're walking.
Oh, Pete.
It's a whole different ramp. But the people who walk on the left-hand side of the sidewalk, that is the expressway. That is the people who have 2 minutes to get to their train, instead of these people who are just taking their sweet fucking time and completely oblivious and inconsiderate to anybody who might want to jump on to make a train and jump on a, you know, an hour and a half ride to go see some kids.
You know, it's funny because I do like that the idea of walking traffic is supposed to follow the same rules as driving traffic. That it's like a subconscious thing.
Yeah, it's got to.
And that people still fuck it up even when you're walking on a, you know, a 6 foot wide sidewalk. But here's the other thing that you don't have to deal with, hopefully, in driving, but I could imagine frustrates the hell out of a walker, is the salmon walker. And the salmon walker is the guy who's coming at you. He's trying to go upstream against traffic, just fucking up everybody's flow and like, "Oh, excuse me, pardon me. You're like, "There's another side of the street for this place, motherfucker, and it's not the furthest left." Like,
and I love, my wife is awesome because she is such a aggressive driver, and she even has her own sign that she puts up on the wall on the driver's side window that says "slower traffic, keep right." So when she passes people in the middle lane who are going slow in the left lane, they can be reminded of how they're not following the laws of the roadway. And I keep joking with my wife that she needs to make me a sign that I can put on the back of my shirt when I walk through all of this sea of people that says "slower traffic, keep right."
Yeah. I like that's a nice like suburban polite bird, you know, like instead of flipping them off because they don't understand
aggressiveness inside of me.
Yeah. I like her sign. Like I just feel like, because here's what
she
you
even
think.
Laminated it. It's awesome.
I believe it. Your lady is great. I'm jealous already. Because anybody knows you get past, you have like this subconscious thing where you look. You're not even aware. That's how you get to see people picking their nose or get to make sure that nobody's watching you pick your nose, which I can't even imagine how often that happens in the walking traffic, like when you're exposed to the elements. But because I do like that idea that you think that you're in a cocoon, even though your cocoon is surrounded by windows on all sides, right, that you're somehow isolated. Nobody can see you rocking out to stick songs. Oh, that guy's listening to Tears for Fears. I could totally see it, by the way. He's pounding on his steering wheel and singing full voice and getting red-faced about it. But I just like that when you look, and my hope is that hers is a nice way, because my hope is like, "Oh, really? Is that way it's supposed to be? Oh, okay, good." Like, but at the same time, you still get to have that tone of like, "Fuck you, dumbass," like without having to exert any effort. Like, she just gets to think, "My sign is there. Hopefully the message will be spread." Like, it's a very zen state while driving on the freeway. I like that. That's awesome. Oh, that makes me laugh. All right. Well, Pete, enough of me diatribing and vomiting my anger all over you. I'm such an asshole that I didn't even describe who you are or why you're here on the show. I mean, obviously you're here because you're a father. But Pete contacted me, and he's got a really cool book that I'm really looking forward to checking out. It's called Dadspirations, The First 100 Days of Fatherhood. Now, am I right that it's like a little bit of like a chicken soup for the soul, but for dads? Is that a fair explanation? Or
sure, we can go with that.
Is that completely wrong? Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, it's kind of twofold. You know, this book is for, you know, the new dad or the dad-to-be who wants a sneak peek into the months that lie ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And who also wants to do some really cool stuff for their newborn as well as for themselves and or their wife, but really nice. Doesn't have the time to think about it or read about it. So this book is a very easy to read, very quick read that, you know, for the dad who wants to do that cool stuff, doesn't have time to think or do it, this is a book that can help point them in the right direction.
So does it take me through day one?
It's also for the moms. It's also for those spouses of those new dads and dads-to-be who either knows or thinks that she needs to give her hubby a swift kick in the ass in the proactive parenting department.
Does it literally take me from like day one, like in day two, or?
Oh God, no! I would never bore anyone with those details. But no, this is on a weekly basis. So, you know, judging from memory, there are, I was an English major. So let's say there's 12 weeks in the first 100 days.
Okay.
No, there's actually 13 weeks. There's 13 weeks, and then there's about 8 or 9 days that go on after those 13 weeks. So what I did in this book is every week I did a quick synopsis of what that week was all about. And every week I also did something for me and or for my wife and something for my newborn daughter.
Can you give me one example of each of them?
Sure.
So like, what's an example? Because I would like to do something for me right now.
We can just start off with week one. So week one of month one, that was, I also kind of gave a focus to each week, like a little theme. And that week's theme was remember it while you can.
Mm.
And my intro to this chapter was all about, you know, the most important day of your life, your wife's life, your newborn's life, goes by so damn quick that you will completely forget all about it in 6 months. And I know that sounds crazy, and some people have better memories than I did, but this was my second child, and I remember that first day, that first week, barely with my son. I remember, you know, a few details, but some of the key details are a little bit foggy, and maybe that's a second kid syndrome or what, but it's kind of funny because when I think about this book, a lot of the reason why I did this book was because I wanted to do more proactive things that I did the first time around. Mm-hmm. Not that I was this horrible, neglectful father with my son, but I definitely wasn't proactive, and I waited for a lot of things to happen. I was this new dad who was just in awe of how awesome and crazy and scary and cool and funny and everything was, that I let everything, for the most part, I was very reactionary with.
Yes, you can't help but be, right?
Right. And, you know, there was a lot of things that, like, you know, really, really that moment of hard-hitting bonding with your son, or that first child, for me, you know, it was, I'd say probably 4 or 5 months in, and, you know, damn it, that wasn't going to happen with number two. So a lot of this book is just trying to get, was trying for me to be more proactive a lot earlier and not waiting for things to happen. So sorry to digress, but that week one was all about remembering it while you can. The first week, everything flies by. Everything is so new. Everything is coming so fast, and everything is just happening that it's hard to remember that stuff months down the road. So yeah, the things that I did that week were two things. For myself, I did a time capsule.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now.
For my daughter, I did a letter. So the thing that I did for myself, the time capsule, what I did was I thought back to that most important day of being in the delivery room and wanted to capture those sights, those sounds, those thought, capture that very quickly, write it down, collect it, put it somewhere so that I'll always be able to either A, you know, go back to that and remember what that was like, or also B, share with my daughter. So some of the things that I had kept in this time capsule, one, you know, we took, I don't know, 2 million photos that day. So I grabbed about a dozen of those, everything from my wife holding my daughter, me holding my daughter, her name spelled out for the first time. My wife and I are big into music, and for both pregnancy, we were blaring music in our delivery room the entire time. So I captured the playlist from our delivery room. I put it on an old iPod of mine, put that into the time capsule. So, you know, when my daughter is old enough and I can run through the playlist with her, I can say, yes, when you were delivered, this song Rihanna, S&M was playing, and especially the lyrics around how chains and whips excite me, while, you know, not really appropriate for your newborn daughter to come out, is still gonna stick in my head over and over. You know, we had this adorable little outfit that my daughter wore out of the hospital, so that went into the time capsule as well. And then I had grabbed this old shitty box of a shitty baseball card box that has meant to me a lot of things. I've always kept a bunch of crap in it over the years. So I took all that crap out and put all of my time capsule stuff in there. And it's now sitting on in a cabinet somewhere in our house that when I want to find it, damn it, I can grab it out and I can either take a look at it, have a great memory, share with my daughter, and that kind of stuff. So then the second part was, what can I do for my daughter? And this was a letter that I wrote to her that I think it was probably the second or third day we were home. All of the thoughts and the feelings that I was having at the time, and kind of all the highs and lows of my personal life, my wife's personal life, so that when she is older, I can read different parts at different times when she's mature enough to handle some of this stuff in the letter. But, you know, for the most part, it's another way of capturing those feelings that honestly I will never have again in 20 years. I will never have those feelings, those memories of that first week of being home with her, that, you know, this is a once in a life, well, I guess not once in a lifetime, it's a second, twice in a lifetime, sometimes a third or fourth, depending on how many kids you have. But for us, we are, you know, this is our second kid. I don't think we're going to have any more. So this is probably the last time that I will have that week of newness and excitement. And it's just a really cool way to capture all of that and always have that, you know, she can always read it, I can always read it, my wife can always read it. And yeah, we're getting all sentimental here.
No, that's okay. That's what I like. You know, I was just looking through the book right now while you're talking too, and that's a really, really cool idea. And I think you might be selling yourself a little short for this to be for new dads or dads to be. I think, like what you just said, for any dad who is going around through this the second time, because here's what I noticed the second time around is you forget everything that happened the first time. At least I did. And my kids are only almost 3 years apart, if that. So it seems like a short amount of time, but what you've done is you've created a nice little system that allows you to be present and be in the moment and yet be aware of what you might want down the road. That's what I really like of what you've done, is that it gives you that ability to tap into those memories, because you kind of have this thing where you think, oh, well, if I take pictures of everything, then it's great. But the idea of being able to remember the music and to have the actual blanket there that you can, you know, that you can experience again, and to have it exist in a tiny little self-contained box, and to designate this is the purpose, as opposed to it being in a book, or, you know, and not preserved as well as you would like it, you know, kind of thing. I really think it's brilliant, and and would be useful for dads who are even three or four kids in. You'll just have to explain to your three older kids why youngest one has a time capsule. But but no, I think it's that's great.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. So when I was writing all of this, it was more therapeutic than anything else. Mm-hmm. I work in advertising, but I don't work on the fun part of advertising. I work on the, or I should say not the creative aspect of advertising, where I'm more on the account service and account management and that kind of advertising. But I still enjoy being creative. And for me, this is a really creative outlook that, you know, at the end of the 100 days, I was able to look back and be like, oh, wow, I did some really awesome stuff. And it's really funny. I was like, well, you know, when I go to write this, you know, as a book and kind of tweak everything, I'm like, wow, you know, people who don't have a daughter are going to be looking at this like, well, I've got a son, what do I do? And even though I would say it's pretty self-explanatory that, well, it says daddy letter for a daughter.
Yeah.
Could just change it to a son. I did kind of write like a funny quip around each thing I did for my daughter, you know, how it could be tweaked for a son. So I wanted to not leave everybody out and kind of include people. And it's just kind of funny. I was just kind of looking back at kind of the difference between what I did for my daughter. And then I'm like, oh, well, you know, for a son, you can also add a few things in and just kind of personalize it that way. So.
Yeah. And can I ask, and I'm sorry if you kind of touched on it a little bit, but what, I'm always curious about this stuff when guys think of things like this, where it's like, man, why didn't I think of that? What was the whole genesis of when you said, you know what, I should sit down and write down a process for people? Where did that come from, if I can ask?
I don't know. You know, I am in kind of a writing thing with some buddies. We've got kind of a hobby. It's called Stunt Dad. It's kind of a way for us to write about all of our dad things that are going on. Mm-hmm. We haven't been as committed as we had wanted, but you know, when we talk about things that are going on, and it was, you know, last fall, and I'm like, man, I think I'm going to write about, you know, my newborn daughter. And it's just something, it was just a creative outlet. And when I started to think of, you know, what should I be writing about, it actually came kind of natural, because I had this idea that I wanted to start doing more proactive things. Uh-huh. And writing about it helped give me some structure as to what I could be doing, when I could be doing it, and why I could be doing it.
Smart. I really think it is. It's a brilliant concept, and I'm not blowing sunshine up your ass. I really like the idea. In fact, while we've been sitting here chatting, I already had the book myself, but I also bought it from my friend Kevin, who's expecting his kid in a couple weeks. That's because I just like the idea behind it. And obviously you and I should be best friends, as I've said before, Pete. Now I'm curious too about this Stunt Dads group. Is this like an online community, or is this just you guys get together and try to see who can, you know, create the tightest seal on a diaper? Is this a separate entity from what
it's,
you?
It's three guys, and we've got an Uncle Terry who's doesn't have kids that he knows of. But you know, the four of us kind of mostly last fall. This spring, spent about, you know, Tuesday nights kind of writing, and you know, it's our creative outlet and our pipe dream of someday becoming something. But we, you know, as parents, have really limited time to think of what that thing could be. And
yeah.
You know, for right now, we're just using it as a way to write and be creative, and you know, wherever it takes us, but.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, brother, man. It's like the very idea of this podcast sometimes gets a little daunting and rough, because I like doing it, obviously. I mean, but it's like, well, at what point can I really talk about being a dad and express myself at being a dad, and at the same time be ignoring my children?
It's a fine balance, and it's tough. It's not easy. Like, luckily, my kids go to bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock, so there is still... I've got 3 hours to do something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, completely, yeah. Oh, man. Well, that's it. We did it. You want to do stick around? Do you have time to do a moment of the week with me?
Absolutely.
So, real quick... let's do that at the end. Let's do some moment of the week. We'll have a little fun with that, and then we'll tell everybody when they could get the book and what kind of special offers you have and all that jazz right after moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
Mine is with my oldest.
That's awesome.
You like that? Thank you. Mine with my oldest is what I'm trying to say. He had a Batman birthday. Let me say this, and he really wanted to see The Dark Knight. Now, people make fun of me, and I'm okay with joking about it or whatever about what my kid is allowed to see at his age. I'm not trying to tell you what to do, and I won't listen to. And I'm not talking to you, Pete. I'm talking to the general you. But I'm not going to listen to you if you tell me what to do either. But so my son really wanted to see The Dark Knight, and it's funny because I feel like society puts this pressure on you that makes you feel like, oh, I can't really, if he watches, you know, too much TV or anything like that, that you kind of feel like you're being a shitty parent. And I haven't really come down on that theory yet, but I do know one thing. My kid really likes watching movies. Like,
oh, they love them.
I know. And I, there's a part of me that sometimes feels guilty about it, but then I kind of realize, well, what if that's what he really likes to do? Is there, what's wrong with enjoying a movie? Now, if it becomes obsessive and he's like, becoming anemic or whatever, vitamin D deficient because the sun never touches his skin, sure. But if the kid wants to sit down and relax and watch a movie because he likes going to this crazy world and all that stuff. And so here's the point. So one day we couldn't go outside because it was 100,000 degrees outside, and they were working on the kitchen and everything, so it wasn't like a lot of room to play because they had stuff all over the kitchen and every and the living room, so we were kind of confined to the couch area. So I'm like, let's zap a movie. So I showed him on my phone the trailer for that, the pirate movie, The Band of Misfits, and then he saw it and he's like, I don't want to see that. So I showed him Battleship. And he's like, I don't really want to see that. I'm like, what do you want to watch? He's like, The Dark Knight. I'm like, well, I'm not paying $5 to download The Dark Knight. I go, I could get it for 99 cents at Blockbuster. So we'll get it after your brother wakes up from his nap. I'm saying, we'll try that. We'll see how you can handle it. And he's like, great. I want to watch Battleship then. And it triggered something in my brain that I'm like, what if my kid's movie taste just jumped ahead? Like, what if he's no longer interested in kiddie animated movies? And he's like, no, I want to see an action flick. Now, clearly, he's not going to sit through Citizen Kane or Leaving Las Vegas or something like that. But I'm just saying that he maybe it's become, his palate is more complex. So we pop in Battleship. He loves it. Now, anybody who's seen the movie, it's a movie for guys that, you know, robots and aliens and blowing shit up. And it's not horrible. And if you look at it from that standpoint, but if you're wanting a piece of entertaining, believable film, then no, that's not for you. But he loved it. So we take him to see The Dark Knight. Or I take him to get The Dark Knight. And I'm a little like, maybe this is bad. And I'm never going to do that again. And here's why. I popped in The Dark Knight. The kid loved it, was absolutely excited. And there's that part where the Joker hides the pencil in the other guy's head. And I'm afraid that that's going to make him want to do that. And I really, even though in my soul, I believe that that's bullshit. That if a kid comes out violent, then he's violent. Like, and that's just the way it is. And I'm not saying it's necessarily the fault of the parents, because I don't think I can say that. I just think that a kid can watch a movie and not believe it's real. You could disagree with me. That's fine. And I'm not talking directly to you, Pete. If you want to talk about it, that's fine because we're here. But I disagree with you, and I don't want to hear you tell me that I'm wrong. So we watched the whole thing of The Dark Knight. And this is where I knew that the kid was into. He watched the whole thing, and that's a long fucking movie. And he knows all the characters in Batman because he likes the cartoons and stuff like that. And so when the guy who plays Harvey Dent, I can't pull his name. I want to say it's Aaron Eckhart, but I think I'm wrong. But it is? Okay. So when he falls over and then knocks over that oil drum and then the oil starts to get in his face, my son goes, oh, he's going to become Two-Face.
And I was like, you're a smart kid.
I know. I was like, holy shit, man. Like, and I go, now who am I to rob this kid from his love? Okay. So the next day I had to do a voiceover gig and I had to call the sitter in to watch the kids so I could do this voiceover thing. And after I was done, it got done a lot faster than I thought. I had the sitter for the day. So I said, you know what? Fuck it. Let's go see Dark Knight Rises because he could love it. And this was my moment. And this is one of those moments that I think we all get to have as fathers where you kind of realize that, you know what? I don't have it all figured out. And sometimes if I just look at my kid and I pay attention enough, he kind of tells me what I should be doing. And we get there. He's got his big old thing of popcorn. He's all excited. He's eating it. And we're watching the trailers. And I can't remember what the movie was, but I remember watching it going, man, that's cool. And he looks up at me in the just the glow of the screen. And he says, Dad, we got to see that movie. And it wasn't a movie for kids. It was a movie that I would enjoy seeing. And I kind of had this moment. It was a moment of the week of me watching him and seeing that touching moment. But it was really a moment of the week for me to have a realization. And I said, I go, yeah, we could go see that movie. Like, who cares if it's PG-13 and you're 4 years old? If that's what you like and you're well-behaved enough to sit in a movie theater and not talk and ruin it for other people, why can't you and I go see a movie whenever there's something cool that I have a buddy? How cool is that? That could be our thing. It's like baseball, you know, in the 50s between sons and fathers. And him and I go see an action flick and I don't have to watch romantic comedies every time I go out to the movies. And I can get out of the house and my wife can relax with the younger one. And it's a win-win scenario. And so we watch The Dark Knight Rises. 20 minutes into it, Pete, he falls asleep.
He was quiet.
And he just sleeps through a good hour and 15 minutes of the movie. And for those of you who know, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes. He wakes up the last 45 minutes, or 2 hours and 45 minutes is what I meant to say. He wakes up for the last 45 minutes. And then I get to have the fun argument with him in the car where he says, I didn't sleep. I go, yeah, you did, son. You missed almost the entire movie. And so on his birthday, this is a long moment of the week, but I really, really did love it. On his birthday, I let him do whatever he wanted to do. I said, we'll go. And he wanted to go to Chuck E. Cheese and he wanted to go to a movie. He loves going to movies. And I that was the other reason why I like no coaxing, no nothing. I just said, dude, it's your day. What do you want to do? I go, first off, what do you want to eat for breakfast? He's like, donuts. I'm like, done. So we went and got donuts. And I go, okay, now what do you want to do? He's like, I want to go to Chuck E. Cheese. I'm like, great. What else do you want to do? He's like, I want to see a movie. I go, okay, let's go to the movie first so you don't fall asleep. And then we'll go to Chuck E. Cheese after. He's like, fine. So we go, what movie do you want to see? There's this or this that you would like. The rest is like, you know, just kind of romantic, kind of sappy movies or artsy movies. And I think I gave him the option between, it was The Dark Knight Rises again. And I can't remember what other movie there was. But anyway, he chose The Dark Knight Rises. And so this time he stayed awake for the whole movie. But he had to go to the bathroom because he went beforehand. But it's a fucking 3 hour movie. And he goes, so he's sitting there and he's shaking his legs in the seat. And I'm like, dude, you have to go to the bathroom? And he was like, yeah, but I'll wait till after the movie. And I go, son, you've already seen this part. It was into the last 45 minutes that he'd seen. I go, let's just go to the bathroom and you can enjoy it. He's like, no, I want to wait till after the movie. I go, dude, you will be able to enjoy the rest of the movie in comfort. And you've already seen this part. So I finally talk him in. He goes to the bathroom and he goes. And another cute little part of that story was that there was a moment where he was kind of talking to his grandmother and I had to tell him, hey, you remember you can't talk during movies. And I take this very seriously because I know that I have kids and I know what it's like to want to get out of the house. But it is really frustrating when you're trying to watch a movie and those people bring an infant and just let it make noise and cry or whatever while you're trying to enjoy a movie. And it's not even a movie for them. I'm a little bit like, okay, it's a kid movie. I get it. But if you're, you know, again, if you're at a PG-13 movie and your kid doesn't shut up, your kid shouldn't be there, in my opinion. But so he's talking and he's whispering to her. I come to find out that his grandmother had fallen asleep in the movie and he was waking her up. He's like, Grandma, wake up, wake up. You're missing it. And he was filling her in on the movie. And then I told him, like, hey, you got to be quiet. So that's mine for my oldest one. And then my youngest one is much, much shorter. But he started saying up. And so it's pretty fucking adorable because he comes up to you and goes up, up. And he puts his hands up and starts to climb up you on his shorts. And we were driving. It's a 5 hour trip to my hometown from where I live. And so we're driving in the car and my wife looks back and I'm like, hi, how are you doing, Jack? And he goes up, up. He wanted out of his car seat. And so then we had to explain to him no. And then, of course, he screamed his head off. But even though, yeah, it was great. It was, it's just, you know, it's cute to see that he's almost a human being. He's almost there to someone you can interact with. And it was pretty cute. So now your turn, please, Pete.
Yeah, my moment of the week actually came about 5 hours ago.
Oh, great.
Last night we had ordered pizza, and my son and I, we went to pick up the pizza. He was very excited to come with, grab the pizza. On the way over, I got him to actually spell out P-I-Z-Z-A, which was a major achievement, and he was loving life. We pick up the pizza, we come back, we eat, he loves it. We have leftovers. My wife and I are so proud because we're like, oh, he spelled pizza, P-I-Z-Z-A. And, you know, as parents, you're like, oh, awesome, he spelled pizza. This is great that he spelled pizza. Love it. You know, it made our night. Uh-huh. And then today I come home, we go to have leftovers, and he stares at me, and I'm like, buddy, pizza. P-I-Z-Z-A. And he gives me this blank stare of no pizza.
I'm done with pizza.
Like, no, pizza, buddy. P-I-Z-Z-A, pizza. He's like, no pizza. I don't like pizza. I kind of look at him like, eat the pizza. From like the greatest feeling in the world to like 24 hours later of pure anger and eat the pizza. That was my kind of funny moment of the week, that he would not eat the pizza, and we put him to bed, and I look at my wife, I'm like, what happened in the last 24 hours that can go from such a 180, that such a high to such a disappointment, yeah, for lack of a better word.
But I think that's a good model for all parenting experiences, where it's like, you do, that's why we do moment of the week. We do about an hour of bitching and moaning, and then the last 10 minutes of the highlights. That's awesome. Do you have one with your daughter? I know she's young, but.
Yeah, you know, My daughter is a little different than my son personality-wise, where she is super laid back. My 2-year-old son is kind of a wild child, and is kind of all over the place, and he's always been a real snuggler. Where my daughter is more, I think she's more kind of knows what she wants when she wants it, and is very self-serving and just a real chill girl. And, you know, this was her first cold the past few days. Oh. So this was the first time that we've had, you know, the waterfall out of the nose. And I was fully expecting, like, the memory of my son when he was sick was just a nightmare. It was so frustrating because he was so needy, and God, that sounds awful saying it like that. He was so needy. It was great.
A safe place.
But
it's
with my daughter, place. I was just kind of having those flashbacks of, okay, we're going to be up for the next 3 days straight holding her because she's going to be just a complete wreck. And my daughter is like a little rock star at, because she has not stopped smiling in 24 hour or for 48 hours. And even though there's just, you can tell it's so hard to breathe because she's so plugged up, and, you know, her face is red, her eyes are puffy, and she's got the total sickness about her, but her personality has not wavered from this happy little calm, cool girl. And it's just been, you know, it's been horrible that she's been sick, but she has been just so awesome through it that I'm like, all right, she could be sick again. This is cool.
I can hang with that. I can do that.
It's a nice, it's always fun to see those little differences in your kids.
Yeah, it's interesting especially when they're so little, how you can already see the personality differences between the two of them, that That was something that I heard, but I didn't really like, oh, that's going to happen. Like, you know, like I was like shocked at how different they are.
Yeah.
All right. So that's our moments of the week. You can give us a call 408-228-4911 or send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Please go to Justin Comedy for all my stand-up dates in the month of September. Off the top of my head, I'm going to be in Merced, Visalia, California on the 7th and 8th, Sunnyvale, California, the 13th through the 16th, and I'll be headlining in Claremont, California on September 21st and 22nd, and then there's some dates in the works in October, but all my dates are available at justincomedy.com if you want to come by and say hi. Pete Densbury's book is Dadspirations, The 100 First Days. Am I right? I had it up here and then I lost it. Damn it. I'm an asshole. Fuck me. First 100 Days of Fatherhood. Dadspirations, The First 100 Days of Fatherhood. The website is dadspirations.com. And you have a big date in October that you're going to do like a big release and sale. Am I right?
Yes, my book is available now, but to celebrate the launch of – this is my first book. So to celebrate the launch of my first book, every person who purchases the book at Amazon.com on October 15th is going to receive over $500 in free gifts, including podcasts, ebooks, exclusive online coupon codes to baby retailers. So remember the date, October 15th. Dadspirations, First 100 Days of Fatherhood. Buy it at Amazon. Over $500 in free gifts.
And I wanted to say this because, and I'll edit this out if you feel like I'm speaking out of school here, but when Pete first contacted me about doing the show, you mentioned that this is a life goal of yours, that you would like to be an Amazon.com bestseller. Am I right, or is that a joke, or...
That is definitely my goal. I've always wanted to be a number one ranking on Amazon.com. Yeah, that's definitely a goal.
So
lifetime goal.
What he has done, to be shoot straight with you, the listeners, is that what he has done is he has done the legwork. He has pounded pavement. He has built a package to create an incentive. So it's not like he's just saying, "Hey, hand me my dream." The guy has put forth the effort to give you a little something back in return. So all you have to do is wait until October 15th and buy his book, Dadspirations, The 100 First Days of Fatherhood, and you could help this guy achieve his dream and get a little skrill, a little kickback from everybody in return. And I think that's fair, don't you think? Well, obviously you think that you built it, but are you okay with me saying it that way?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the gifts are extremely valuable. I mean, there's going to be podcasts from relevant daddy podcasts.
Yeah.
So
relevant content,
including Justin. So
of course
Justin is going to be contributing some of his podcasts as well. So I mean, this is a win-win situation for everybody around.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much, Pete. I will definitely put out the word. We'll throw a link up on thedadpodcast.com and do whatever we can to help spread the word. So please, I'm going to say this on the show, but this is more for just you and I. Please feel free to hit me up via email or whatever and say, hey, throw out a blast, and I will do it on the Twitter, the Facebook, all that stuff. Is there a Facebook and a Twitter for the book?
There sure is, yes.
So facebook.com/...
Dadspirations.
Dadspirations. And the same thing with the Twitter. Is it at Dadspirations?
That's correct.
All right. Sweet. Thank you so much for being on the show. So on behalf of my new best friend forever, Pete, my walker, my compadre in rotten milk and sippy cups, this is Justin Worsham saying stay frosty.